Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ruth, one of the enduringly popular features of the podcast is where we exchange music. Over the months we've been doing it, I've played Crosby, Stills and Nash, and also played the Byrds. And mm-hmm. The thing those two bands had in common was David Crosby, who founded the Byrds.
He died.
No, he's still with us.
Huh.
David Crosby, what they had in common, he founded the Byrds, and then later was one of the members of Crosby, Stills and Nash. He's now sober. After decades, he's about 72, 73.
What's the point?
That's a good point you make there. But he's now sober after decades of drug abuse. And he's tweeted this week, if smoking marijuana causes short-term memory loss, what does smoking marijuana do? Which I rather liked. That's David Crosby. It's because he's got a sense of humour. No?
Yeah, it's okay.
And he's sober, but you know, he's sober, yeah, without being pious about it.
Yeah, as it true.
Yeah. We better get on because
not that funny.
I found it amusing, but there you go. I'm from the 60s, the same as David Crosby is. We've got a lot to talk about today, so should we fire away?
Let's.
I love it. It's almost like Pavlov's conditioned reflex. As soon as I play the little
Pavlov's,
sting.
Pavlov's? Who's Pavlov?
Pavlov, the famous psychologist.
Never heard of Pavlov? Well, no, I've heard of him. But
have you heard of Pavlov's conditioned reflex? Well, the experiments he did with dogs, and they started blimey, I thought you would have known that. They started to salivate when you just showed them the... Or basically what he did was...
That's like me with food.
he rang a bell and then gave them some food.
Yeah, so then when they hear the bell...
took the food away, they'd hear the bell.
Yeah, I know about the condition, that stuff, but I didn't know it was Pavlov.
It was definitely Pavlov.
Interesting.
Let's give the guy his credit. Yes, you start to yawn, but we'll have another yawn.
Well, no, it's just because you said yawn. That's not my fault.
That's Pavlov's conditioned reflex. Liam Neeson, let's address...
Are we going to start with Liam Neeson?
Well, we can start with another joke, as he didn't like that one. This is Christian Talbot, and his joke is, words can't express how much I hate World Emoji Day.
Oh, I saw that.
Have you seen that?
Yeah,
It's quite amusing.
Yeah, it's okay.
Again, it's just quite amusing.
They're not like laugh out loud, ha ha ha. But then I don't think a one-liner like that really is often laugh out loud. You know, I think it's more like bits make you like laugh because they like build on it.
They build on it, you're right, absolutely. Liam Neeson, what's your take on Liam Neeson?
For the listeners, should we do two things before we start talking about it? One, say what Liam Neeson said.
I was about to say.
Oh, were you going to say that? I just didn't want you to be like, what do you think? And then people were like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And then they think we might be discussing Taken 3 or something.
No, we won't discuss Taken 3.
He said in an interview. Have you not seen Taken 3?
I've never seen any of the Taken.
You've never seen any of the Taken?
I've not seen Taken 1, Taken 2, or Taken 3.
I've not seen 2, I don't think. I think I've seen 1 and 3.
Well, Taken 3 is kind of...
You won't understand Taken 3 at all if you've not seen the first two.
No. Liam Neeson said that he once armed himself...
Oh, no, my other thing to preface with was we are white people.
Who's Liam Neeson?
No, we are white people.
Yes,
and
I know that.
This is an issue about race, and I think that it's really important to say when you speak on it, because white people should, especially people with a platform to speak about it, but I think that they should say before that it's important to stand back and let black black people speak about race. I'm assuming
most people will have realised by now that we're white.
Yeah, no, I'm just... Well, you know what I mean.
Because there is a picture that goes up with
No, but I'm just... No, but it's important. I think it's really important to acknowledge it, to say, I'm going to talk about this because I can talk about it. And it's important to acknowledge, like, race issues, even if you're not, like, minority ethnic. But... Black, Asian, minority ethnic. But you should say...
You see, I'm part of a persecuted minority. I'm Jewish. And, you know, we control the media, we control banking. So, but apart from that, we're more or less a persecuted minority.
But you should say that it's important to step back and, you know, and let you know what I'm saying. I just think that you should say that before we talk about it.
Well, go on. You tell us what he's done and what he's said.
So, he was promoting his film, which is called Cold Pursuit, and it's a film about revenge. And several years ago, his friend told him about how she'd been raped and by a black man, and he went out for a week trying to find a black man to murder because he was so angry. It's basically the story.
Did you not think to yourself that this... I mean, the first time I heard about this and heard about all the row that it created, I thought to myself, this sounds to me like a story... Because he's an actor, and it sounds to me like a story he'd made up
to sell
a film about rape. Because why would you...
Revenge.
About revenge, sorry, it's not about rape. So it struck me that he'd made the whole thing up.
No, I don't think he has, because I think that he would have said he made it up by now. I don't think he could.
It just sounded so implausible.
What I think was the first thing is, oh my God, he's 66 years old, he's been doing interviews for 40 years of his life or something, and he said that in an interview. Are you actually kidding? Is he stupid? Do you know what I mean? Of course that would turn into a massive story, like... How could you not? That was my immediate reaction, was like, as if.
See, we're getting two views on this. People say, Piers Morgan, for instance, is saying that he's a horrendous racist.
Yeah, and he's a murderer, and he should, yeah.
Well, he's not a murderer.
Not a murderer, but that's kind of what Piers Morgan said. He was but the act of thinking about murder is the same as committing murder, which would make me a murderer probably too. And
everybody else.
Else in the world. I think, and so he said it's absolutely abhorrent and stuff. Yeah. And then the other side of the thing is that he's been actually quite honest by acknowledging it. That's
And John Barnes, who's a black ex-footballer, has said that he thinks he's very brave coming out and admitting it, and we're all racist in some way, which I suppose we are.
I think that he is completely right. I don't know whether...
You think who John Barnes
is
right?
I think John Barnes is right that everyone is inherently racist, unconsciously. I think that maybe not... I don't know whether racist would be the right word, and I don't know whether it would be more like racial prejudice. Because I just think that
What's the difference?
So, well, racist would mean...
You can
mean
be
that
racist without being prejudiced.
No, I think you can be prejudiced without being racist.
No, what I'm saying is you can be racist, but you would treat people equally.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. I think that... you have a natural affinity for people who look similar to you. And there's scientific studies on this that you are more likely... It's like an animalistic thing, that you're more likely to protect people and like people who look more similar to you on a basic level. And there's...
Do you think it's outrageous that Liam Neeson's movie has been cancelled, the premiere of his movie?
I don't know, but I think that he...
No, I want you to say... Yeah, I think it is. I think it's outrageous that his movie has been cancelled.
Well, yeah, I do think that's bad, because think that...
Let's go and rip up all... let's find somebody who's committed some outrage at some point. Let's go and...
Rip up all Harvey Weinstein's films.
Yeah, let's go and throw away all Harvey Weinstein's films. Let's go and tear down Leonardo da Vinci's paintings.
No, I think
paintings.
That is ridiculous, but I also think that what Liam Neeson has done wrong now... So I think that it's not... I don't think it's brave.
You don't think it's brave?
No,
to
I don't know. Because on the one hand, I think that... he is honest when he's saying that, like, being angry will make people act not like themselves and will make people do things that they wouldn't normally do. And I've been in arguments with mum or whatever where I've said things in the heat of the moment that I would not think about saying afterwards, or, you know, with my friends and relationships, whatever. Like, you do say stuff that you then immediately wish you hadn't said. But I think that him saying, I'm not racist, and then saying after he said all that stuff and then going, oh, I'm not racist. I don't even think he understands his own feelings, and I don't think he understands his own racism. And then he came out afterwards and he did the show whatever, where he was explaining
Good
himself.
Good Morning America.
Yeah, and he didn't apologise, and he should have. He should have said, I'm sorry for being that person. I'm sorry for
Why
thinking
that
thing.
Why do you have to apologise? I think it's enough to explain. What difference does that make? He's sort of just explaining...
No, because the way that he explained... I don't know whether apology would even be the right word, but the way that he explained was not at all remorseful of thinking those things.
Well, you say it wasn't remorseful.
It was more just an explanation. And also, he would never have said... The thing that it comes down to, which I think is the really weird thing, is that he said in the interview, the original interview, when she said that she'd been raped, he said, what colour was he? Someone who's not racist doesn't do that. If one of my friends told me that they'd been raped, I would never ask what colour they were.
That's him telling the story. Because I still cleave to the view that he's made it up to flog the movie. Because conveniently, see, obviously, what the next step for the media would be to track down the Liam Neeson friend who was raped. She's dead.
Yeah.
She's dead. So it just seems very convenient that for the basis of this story that he's told...
Do you think that someone would stoop that low? As to make a story about someone being raped? Yeah, to sell a movie.
I think it might be possible. I'll tell you what I think. I think it's possible he heard the story and somebody else did it. He wanted to talk about the sort of atavistic nature of revenge. And I think he's plucked a story and he's an actor. I don't know, but I think there's at least a 50-50 chance of that.
Wow, 50-50, throwing out some statistics.
I think there's at least a 50-50 chance. I also think that in a way, because he grew up in Ireland at the time of the Troubles, when there were all sorts of revenge attacks going on all the time. The daily life in Northern Ireland was about revenge attacks, about people being kneecapped and absolutely terrible, terrible things that he grew up with in Northern Ireland. That's another reason you would cut him a bit of slack, I think.
Yeah.
And certainly not cancel his movie. Maybe conditioned by Northern Ireland. Now, in Northern Ireland, what people used to ask people all the time was, what school did you go to? And they know immediately whether it's a Catholic or a Protestant. And if in his upbringing, when there was a rape or a crime or a kneecapping or anything like that, one of the first questions you would establish was what religion was the person who did it. So I'm just wondering if that's...
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think that it's really... What I think it does highlight the whole story is that people are really quick... People really quickly, after the story had been released, took aside Piers Morgan. It's abhorrent, blah, blah, blah. John Barnes. Oh, he's a hero for saying this. Do you know what I mean?
It's in between.
It's somewhere in between. And it's and also, to talk about this takes massively complex conversations about race in general. And I'm not educated enough to do that on it. I don't think you are. I think you need professors in race relations to talk about it.
I'm not a professor, but do you want my very playful take on this?
This is a pre-prepared joke.
And that's it. My take on this is that people are prepared to cut Liam Neeson a bit of slack, but not Harvey Weinstein or Woody Allen, so I'm putting it down to anti-Semitism. I'm joking. Before we leave the Liam Neeson case altogether, there was apparently, and I read this in Rod Liddell's column, which is never always that reliable, but basically he said there was an article in The Guardian that said you shouldn't smile at black people because, you know, when you see a black person, I presume to show how non-racist you are. And he quotes from The Guardian, and it says, "Over-smiling allows us to mask an anti-blackness that is foundational to our very existence as white. A fleeting benevolence, of course, has no relation to how black people are actually undermined in white spaces. Black friends have often told me that they prefer open hostility to niceness." That's Rod
Friends? Yeah, that's I understand what you're saying, but that's both that some of his friends have said that. Which people does he hang around with?
Over smiling. Well, when people talk
I do that to old people, not to black people so much. I understand that the whole world is a white space, but I do it to old people to prove that I'm not a hooligan.
It is interesting that over smiling.
Yeah.
Over smiling. And you do all sorts of things to show how inclusive you are, don't you? I mean, but then at the end of the day,
also,
how do you stop?
The thing is, right, I get annoyed with people who say this, and I understand why.
Get annoyed with people who say what?
No, I say this, and then I was going to say it. Give me a sec. People will say that they're not a feminist, they're an egalitarian. And it makes me really annoyed because I think it ignores a historic and systemic oppression of women.
We're not talking about women here.
No. It's the same thing. And then when the Black Lives Matter movement happened, loads of people said, well, all lives matter. That's not the point. The point is that black people have faced specific oppressions that white people haven't, and it's the same thing with women. And so in an ideal world, there would be no need to treat people differently because everyone is just equal, but they're not. So I think you do have to oversmile or use like positive discrimination in the workplace, because if not, nothing will ever get to that point. So I think it's a necessary evil in a way that you have to overdo things, because we don't live in a world where things are equal.
Let's lighten it up a bit and talk about Graham Norton. You a big fan?
Yeah, I love Graham Norton.
You love Graham Norton, well.
Oh, has he done something wrong where I'm not going to be able to like him anymore?
No, I think you can still like him. It's a complaint about Graham Norton and Jonathan Ross, actually.
Jonathan Ross I'm not a fan of.
No. Well, Maureen Lipman, who's an actress, quite well known. She's been in a lot of plays. She was in a very well-known advert years ago, way before your time, for British Telecom, before they were even called BT. They were just called British Telecom, yeah. So she's in these adverts. She has complained that the chat shows these days, and particularly what she calls the sofa chat shows, so she's talking about Jonathan Ross and she's talking about Graham Norton, that they're puerile and uninformative, because there used to be people like Wogan and Michael Parkinson did chat shows. But what she's saying now is, she says, these are misogynistic formats that pressure female guests to share embarrassing sexual stories, according to Maureen Lipman. She says, what matters most in them are the bum-poo, willy-titty references, a sign, in my view, of the increasing infantilisation of TV. And she's written this in an article for the Radio Times. Her description of larky sofa shows overseen by sniggering hosts, it matches both the Graham Norton show on BBC One and ITV One's The Jonathan Ross Show. She said that the new generation of late-night talk show hosts, so this is moving on from Wogan and Parkinson, those people, had descended into a battle between female guests to tell the most offensive, degrading anecdotes. And she cited British actress Kate Beckinsale, who admitted hiding chocolates between a sleeping friend's buttocks as a prank, and Olivia Colman, who confessed to placing a sponge between her legs before filming a sex scene. She also referenced Miriam Margolis, who tells...
Oh, well, yeah, but that's her whole thing, is telling the most
outrageous
stories. And sometimes you can see Graham Norton's face thinking, this story's even a bit too much for this.
What do you think, though?
But that's the whole... It's not question time, is it? Do you know what I mean? They're not there to be completely informed. That's the thing. And also, I don't think the men tell just as embarrassing stories. John Malkovich told a story about his own circumcision. He told a story, basically.
How did you remember that? They do it at a very, very early age.
Oh, no. So basically, he said, I'm circumcised. And his wife said, no, you're not. And he said, no, I definitely am. And then he went to a doctor for like a physical, like checkup, whatever. And he was like, would you mind? I was having a disagreement with my wife. He told it really well, but I was having a disagreement with my wife. And she said that I'm not circumcised. And he said, no. And he was like, am I circumcised? And the doctor just went, no.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like the men tell these stories as well. I watched the Graham Norton show pretty religiously.
You love it.
And I've heard both of those stories. The Kate Beckinsale one, she seems happy to tell it. And the Olivia Colman one was about shooting a sex scene with Emma Stone.
Why shouldn't you call it same sex? Because
sometimes you call it gay sex, but you shouldn't call it gay sex because it's just sex.
I can't keep up with all this, but go on.
So she's about shooting a sex scene with Emma Stone, and that was like one of their techniques to make it more natural, because she never shot that kind of sex scene before. And like, again, she doesn't seem like she doesn't want
to tell
it.
I'd love to know where the sponge came in.
Just to make it look more, to make it feel less uncomfortable, because you've got something to do.
Right.
That was the whole thing. It's about acting.
Sounds to me to be a perfectly decent
anecdote. And
so
she's
Maureen Lipman's talking
And I don't know about the infantilisation of TV.
Well, we used to have intellectual shows like the Benny Hill Show.
No, but I don't think it's any more. TV is, it's what I don't know what Orwell calls it, but he calls it something like brainwashing for the masses or something like that. Opioid of the masses. Opiate. That's Marx.
Opiate of the masses.
Opiate definitely. Of the masses. That's Marx. That's what he says. Yeah. That's what TV is.
I think she's all wrong about the infantilization. Yeah. I think TV has always been a mix between stuff that is infantile and is just sort of chewing them for the eyeballs, really.
I would say that there's a place for that, and there's a place for Made in Chelsea and the Graham Norton Show, and there's also a place for Blue Planet by David Attenborough. You can have both.
Any of your friends smoke? I don't know whether smoking is just completely off.
No, people do still smoke.
20 friends, say 20 of your close friends, what percentage would you say smoke?
20 of my close friends?
Yeah, of your close friends you're talking about. Or is it just, has it become a class thing?
I don't think it's a class thing at all.
No, you don't think working class kids, more than you and your sort of middle class chums, you don't think that working class
because
kids...
Because also I do have quite like, I think basically, I think with class stuff, I live in a in-between middle-class, working class. I just think that some stuff with working class, middle class is quite difficult to define the exact class line. I don't think there is as much anymore.
No, I think you're right. I think also if you're in the north, it is much more blurred. It's very easy in London because if you were at school in Hampstead or Highgate, everybody would be middle class.
I think the north is a completely different world to the south, and I think there's less class divide even, perhaps.
Well, anyway, so it's not a class thing then. Two out of 20 smoke.
Yeah, but then I think smoking in the daytime is very different to like smoking on a night out, because that's more common.
Yeah.
Do you know what
I mean? Well, this one is just because...
So smoking regularly, less.
There's a production studio that's launched a project to encourage the removal of smoking from film and TV. So you'd get a thing like Mad Men, where everybody smoked in Mad Men because it was set in the 50s and everybody did use to smoke in the 50s. There's a Centre for Disease Control and Prevention in America said there was a casual relationship between depictions of smoking in the movies or TV like Mad Men, where it looks cool. I mean, the cover of
Alex Turner on the cover of like Arctic Monkeys albums is smoking.
Yeah. Do you think there is? Because
that's ridiculous.
Well, what this production company are doing, it's a scene where people are smoking. They've taken the cigarette, they've photoshopped the cigarette out of their mouths and put a kazoo in instead, thinking that will discourage more smoking.
I just think that's ridiculous.
It does look cool though, doesn't it?
Completely agree. I think it looks so cool. Which is completely wrong, man. I'm conditioned to think that way, clearly.
But do you think your friends are influenced anyway by Alex Turner looking cool on the Arctic Monkeys?
Yeah,
but
definitely.
But does he influence that they would take up smoking because of that?
No, but I don't think they would take up it up because of that. I think that people smoke on like nights out and at parties because of that. I also don't think you can take it out of films and TV and stuff, because if I was writing a play and I wanted people smoking in it, I was writing a play that's set at a house party or at a club, people are going to be smoking.
So no need, you would say, to replace cigarettes with kazoos?
No, I don't think so. I think that you should, you know, if you're writing something that's naturalistic, then there's no way you can avoid it.
We'll have a short break and then we'll swap music.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now, I've got a reason for mine this week.
Oh.
This is quite interesting, how technology drives popular music, more than art in any way. And I've mentioned to you in the past, you get rock and roll songs and things like Buddy Holly, Chuck Berry, you know, classic rock and roll from going way back into the 1950s. And those songs are nearly always 2 minutes, 2.25 minutes long. They're very short songs.
Because they had to fit on jukeboxes.
Because they had to fit on jukeboxes. And of course, the more people would put their dime in the jukebox, the songs would be short.
Did you know we had dimes?
So that people put their dime in a jukebox more often, you know, because they'd get 3 songs would cost them, you know, a quarter or whatever. As jukeboxes became less important for playing songs, they got longer and longer, and you got some very long singles in the 60s. And the longest one was a single called MacArthur Park. I don't know if you ever heard it. But it's hard to cut 20 seconds out of it because it changes, you know, different styles right the way through. It's 7.5 minutes long.
Wow.
Which
was long.
Yeah, it was a boon for some of us on the radio because it meant we could go and kind of have a short break in between. We could have a comfort break in between songs. But anyway, I'll play you just a little bit of it, 20 seconds.
In the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take.
There we are, 21 seconds of MacArthur Park.
I guess music is kind of longer now, but the song.
No! That's the point
I'm
making.
It's not longer.
No, the point I'm making is it's gone back to being shorter. The reason, and this is the whole thing about technology driving it, because rap songs, because of Spotify, have become much shorter. Are you familiar with the artiste Lil Pump?
Lil Pump, yeah. I saw Lil Pump at Leeds Fest. It's absolutely like, so it was the worst mosh pit I've ever been in. It was so... Just like, it was mainly boys, I think, which didn't help because they're bigger, like just... Mm. Physically, there was a guy collapsed in the thing and had to get like carried out and stuff because Lil Pump like stood on the stage and then he made everyone like move split in the middle and then he wanted to like walk out into the stage and it was just too much. It was way worse than any of the bigger mosh pits.
Well, his hit last year, which went Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang,
Gucci, Gucci Gang. Gang, yeah, Gucci, this is his gang. Most famous song.
Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang, Gucci Gang.
It continues like that.
Yeah, it was just about 2 minutes long, Gucci Gang. And apparently, this is to do with Spotify. You know, streaming. It's to do with streaming. Yeah. People don't want to stream. You know, people lose attention after a couple of minutes. And therefore, and especially rap songs. Do you know Bad Baby? Bad spelt B-H-A-D, baby spelt B-H-A-B-I-E.
I don't know him.
His first 3 singles apparently comprise less than 6 minutes total. Well, albums are getting shorter as well, apparently. Lil Pump's 15-song self-titled debut album is just 36 minutes long. And that's going back to rock and roll days. Rock and roll days albums are about 36 minutes long.
Wow.
The Beatles obviously lengthened the whole thing, you know, and Sgt.
Pepper.
Obviously, it was the Beatles who were in the forefront of everything. So that's the reason I played a bit of that.
Interesting.
It was Richard Harris who performed it, who was an actor. You'll know him best as playing Dumbledore in the first 2 Harry Potter movies.
Yes.
That was Richard Harris.
Yes.
He's an old geezer. Mm-hmm. But in the 60s, he was a young geezer. And
yeah, I can't think of people who were young. You know, you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. One of his most famous films was This Sporting Life in 1963.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah. Well, it's set in Wakefield.
Yeah.
Yeah, around Wakefield Trinity. So he made that film. He was one of those stars of that era, you know, what they used to call kitchen sink movies, British films. The song was written by Jimmy Webb, who wrote loads of fantastic songs like By the Time I Get to Phoenix. You probably know that.
Yeah.
Wichita Lineman. So your song this week?
Yeah, not got as much to say about it as that. It's a song called Elephant Gun by a band called Beirut. So that was Elephant Gun by Beirut. They're an American band. It was originally the solo, just one guy called Zach Condon from Santa Fe, which is in...
California.
And their music is kind of indie rock, but it's also got a lot of, they call it, world music. It's almost, European gypsy-esque.
Well, you could tell the gypsy bit there.
Yeah.
Was it... What was it about, though? Elephant Gun. Have you any... No idea
what
it's about.
I don't know.
Just a nice tune.
You don't ask me that, usually.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, usually I can tell from the video what's it about. This was like three girls dancing around and occasionally draping themselves over the guy.
So it starts off saying, "If I was young, I'd flee this town," and that's what Zach Condon did when he was 17, because he ran away from home to Europe and stuff. And it's kind of the Elephant Gun stuff. They're big
rifles,
shoot down
elephants,
game and things. And I think it's about a nostalgia for that time that Beirut's music is meant to kind of... Because a lot of their stuff sounds more old-fashioned than it is. Mm. So this is from the 2000s, but it sounds older than it is. Is that fair?
Yeah, yeah.
To say, yeah. So I think it's that kind of idea. And I think it's about... So the director of the video said that it was about the nostalgia you feel and the juxtaposition of between what you remember your life to have been versus actually what it was. But I really like Beirut. I think they're really good. That's it.
Well, I can't argue with that. Quite a few emails this week, Ruth. Martin Bolton says, "Ruthie, as you've never been to..."
It really makes me laugh that everyone calls me Ruthie, because no one... you and mum and stuff call me Ruthie a lot, but...
nobody at school.
None of my friends would ever call me
Ruthie. Well, yes, so he's going from the title of the podcast, obviously.
I know, I understand.
Martin Bolton says, "Ruthie, as you've never been to Birmingham, if you do come, I'll arrange for my 20-year-old daughter to show you round." Sorry, he said, forgot to say, we do live in Birmingham. We're not just randomly offering to show you round. So there you are. So I'm sure you won't take it up, but this is a little invitation.
Definitely not.
You're becoming famous. You'd be too embarrassed.
I'd be maybe the most nervous I've ever been.
Okay, so Martin, thank you very much. We do appreciate the offer, but she's probably not going to take it up. And you might take this one up when you're not too busy. Somebody called John Med, who I think is a student, I can't remember, he's been in touch with me before. He says, "Loving the podcast, what's not to like?" What's not to like, Ruth?
I mean, multiple things.
He says, "Loving the podcast, what's not to like?" Martin, you were kind enough to answer a few quick-fire Q&As for my blog a while back. Ruth, would you care to join in too? If I email some cues over, you'd be a star.
Yes, of course.
She'll answer your questions if they're answerable, but you won't answer anything you don't want to. And Martin Leo says, "Personally, I think Ruth should go to York." This is in the Great York Lancaster debate. Because
it's much like the earlier Wars of the Roses.
Yeah, because
the same amount of bloodshed ensues.
Indeed. "Personally, I think Ruth should go to York because Sean Bean is nicer than Charles Dance, but I might be getting confused."
Sean Bean is from Game of Thrones.
Yes, he's from Yorkshire.
Very famous.
And Charles Dance, presumably, is in Game of Thrones as well.
This is where I don't know. Charles Dance.
I assume he's in Game of Thrones.
Oh, really?
I think that's it.
Game
of Thrones
is that
reference.
The thing?
Yeah.
I just don't know the actors, but I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones. So. Mm. Oh, yeah, he's Tywin Lannister.
Right. Well,
if you'd have said Tywin Lannister,
you're supposed to be up on all these Game of Thrones references. He also says, "If you like the harmonies in that No Name song, or No Nami, you might like Birds of a Feather by Wolf Peck, a fantastic band."
I'll write that down, because I've never heard of that.
Yeah, Birds of a Feather by Wolf Peck, spelled V-U-L-F-P-E-C-K. And Andrew Mangian says, "Hello, Martin. I just listened to your latest podcast, and I'm somewhat dismayed by the anti-South sentiment displayed by Ruth, i.e. Bristol is, quotes, too South. Could you provide an explanation why there is so much vitriol aimed at anything south of Nottingham?" I think we're getting our own back, I would have said.
It's such a thing on Twitter. Someone tweeted, I thought it was really funny. Someone tweeted, you know, with the crocodile thingy. What's it called? The symbol that looks like a bracket, but not a bracket.
Not a bracket.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Triangular bracket.
Yeah, they used to call them crocodile mouths in school to teach you that one side... So whatever's on one side of it is good and the other side is bad.
Right.
So someone put south, north, and then someone put Korea maybe, but not England, mate. I thought it was really funny. But there is a really big anti-South sentiment, but it's not to do with the people who are from the South. I mean, it's a little bit to do with that because we think they're soft.
I think it's a lot to do with the media, isn't it?
It's a lot to do with the media.
Snows in
and also,
London, that's the lead item on the news.
Yeah, well, no, and all the news is from London, and also the trains are terrible up here and no one cares. But if the tubes are down in London, it's a it's a big story. Yeah. But literally, our train was cancelled today. Do you know what I mean? It's just not... And it's just... Sometimes it feels like the country doesn't care about the North.
Sometimes you think that students, especially students at Oxford and Cambridge, don't read the news. There was a student dance, an event, you know, a disco dance, whatever, was arranged for St. Hugh's College, Oxford. Mm-hmm. And they decided to call it... it's been cancelled for being offensive. Because they,
literally, you hear about them so often. It's like, just stop it. Yeah. Like that thing I told you about Durham with miners and Margaret Thatcher. It's as if they don't know.
It's as if they don't read anything. So after Durham and all the various other ones cancelled, now they've had to cancel one at St. Hugh's College, Oxford. The event was called Romans and Roadmen. It was a costume party to which guests were invited to dress as Romans or roadmen. The latter does not refer to construction workers in hard hats, but to tough young town folk who loiter around street corners, occasionally buy and sell drugs, and use words such as peng, which we know about, peak, which means sad.
Yeah, well, peak is like bad. Not like, you wouldn't be like, oh, I feel really peak.
Yeah, so we use words like peng, peak, mandem, which is your friends. Yeah. The party was accused of being classist and offensive and had,
really?
Had to be called off. Because, basically, quite apart from being offensive, there's no link between Romans and roadmen. It's just two entirely random things.
No, they both begin with Ara, yeah, I think you'll find.
Precisely. It was done entirely for the alliteration. It should have been Romans and barbarians. So that would have made sense.
Well, I think that's the idea, is that they're saying that roadmen are barbarians, but they're not.
Poshos and peasants, possibly, could have called it as well.
Oh, God, that's so bad. Yeah. Why do they... I just don't understand, though, because surely... You must be pretty smart. Did you see that? This is what I wanted.
College, Oxford,
this I don't know. Have you seen the stuff about Warwick University?
Mm-hmm. Oh, those boys. About the boys who posted about.
Well, no, they didn't post it. It was in their group chat. I don't actually know how their group chat got public. And they were talking about rape and stuff, and it's just awful. And then they were like, "It's just black humour," and you're like, "Well, no, not really. It's just." Really terrible.
Well, presumably when you go to...
And then they've not been excluded or anything. It's ridiculous. And so some girl found like their actual names and stuff and was like, if Warwick University aren't going to expel them, then here's their names. And also, I don't think that's really okay, to be honest, because...
No, I don't know.
Because it's the cult of justice, isn't it? That if you've seen Black Mirror...
No, well, I saw one and I didn't like it. So
no, I know, because I've showed you the wrong episodes and you should watch the other ones. But if you've seen the episode of Black Mirror called White Bear, that's all about the cult of justice and stuff, and it's about people going after one person because they know this story about them, which is not right, and it's not... You know, we have courts for a reason. And speaking of Black Mirror...
All right.
I've got a thing about the... So there's an episode of Black Mirror called Nosedive... The basic premise of it is that everyone is ranked on a system that's kind of like Instagram or Facebook or something, where you like send likes and points to each other and ratings, and that controls what you are and you aren't allowed to do. And then I saw this story about the social credit system in China. So this is, have you heard about this?
No.
So it's a national reputation system being developed by the Chinese government, and it's been partially put into place from 2014, but should be... By 2020, it's intended to standardise the assessment of citizens and businesses on their social reputation or social credit. So they'll be scored based on a lot of things that you can't really find much detail about. And there's lots of punishments if you have a lower rating and stuff, one of which is low scores have been blocked from buying tickets for domestic flights, also from buying like luxury flights and sitting in certain places and stuff based on that social credit score, which must be what
what are you ranked on?
On your likability, essentially.
Are you sure it's not on whether you've committed some sort of...
I don't think so. It seems like it's...
You know, like if you don't empty your dustbin or you don't...
I really don't understand. You can barely find any information about it, which I think is Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, so good question. Like how, what?
Yeah,
so it's basically, it's called your citizen score, and it comes from monitoring an individual's social behaviour, so from their spending habits and how regularly they pay bills to their social interactions. So it's going to become the basis of how trustworthy you are, basically. But how to, I don't know how you measure someone's social interactions.
No, no.
But that is what they aim to do by 2020. So I assume you would have to.
But it goes
you would have to rank each other, because that's the only way you can get rankings on social interactions is if you...
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to... I suppose in a way it's like Uber, where they can give you your Uber driver.
As a five-star Uber ranked customer, 5 stars, which is really, really difficult to get, by the way, I might tell you. Mm. Not many, only like 0.1% of the population have 5. I always rank all my Uber drivers 5 stars because... Oh, well, yeah, because it's their livelihood, do you know what I mean? It's true. Not a game, is it?
It sounds frightening to me. It sounds like
that is
an Orwellian future.
That's what it's it. And so if you've seen this episode of Black Mirror, obviously Black Mirror draws on Orwell and the and Atwood and Huxley and all those famous
and the
writers.
Twilight Zone.
Yeah. It draws on all of those things, and this episode called Nosedive is pretty much the social credit system, and it is terrifying. But it also makes me question, so this is in China, and I don't think in any way that the UK is at this stage, obviously.
No.
But because it does question that to, you do get...
It goes back to Chairman Mao, so it's very much a communist thing. The Chairman Mao started the whole business.
But it does question how close we are getting to a world where certain things are blocked and certain things are easier based on your social reputation in terms of, like... how many followers you have on Instagram or the type of things you post. Do you know what I mean? I think that we are going that way, and we're increasingly with the internet, and you can see it with the stories about the students from Warwick on Liam Neeson. Mm. We're increasingly quick to judge people on their social interactions.
Certainly. Yeah. And it's a sort of communistic thing as well, that, definitely.
Yeah, but it's very scary.
It's very scary. I mean, now we've enabled all this spying to take place because we're not, as we've said previously on the podcast, it's not Orwell's thing of they're watching you, we're watching ourselves,
and we're watching each other. That's the scariest thing about this, about the social credit system and the episode of Black Mirror, is that it's you can never be truly close to anyone because you're all being watched by each other. And that's the thing in Orwell, of children watch their parents and husbands watch wives. Mm. And
yes, and obviously anything that goes, that's like East Germany, if you like, when we're being spied on, all this. There was a film called The Lives of Others, which was absolutely brilliant about East Germany. We better watch it. Have you got a meme of the week?
Yes, I do. Again, this is less funny, more informative. I just learned the origin of pink lemonade, and I need you all to hear this. So, this dude selling concessions at a circus back in like 1857 ran out of lemonade, and he needed water to make more, but there wasn't a stream or water pump. But the bareback horse rider had just washed her pink tights in a bucket of water, staining the water pink. So, being the enterprising fella he was, dude just threw in the lemons and sugar and told everyone it was a special strawberry lemonade. Well, the circus patrons saw pink lemonade and thought, that is truly amazing, and he ended up selling twice as much lemonade than usual. To reiterate, this dude sold people sweaty horse crotch water, and it was so popular it became an actual thing. Delicious.
I just like the expression horse crotch water. I think what a band they would be, horse crotch water. So we ought to give the address. I've not given the address. I know you don't like me overselling the email, but I do like to get them because it's, you know, it's sort of validation sort of thing. So
validate us, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please validate us at martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
That's just martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com, not it is. At Martin. You know, because you said you can find us at Martin, and I didn't want people to think it was at Martin.
No, it's an email address, so people
Martin
would
and
know.
Ruth, yeah.
It's an email address, martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com.
And you can also find the songs in full on the Spotify playlist.
Oh, you've got the full version of MacArthur Park in 7 minutes 21 seconds.
Well, if it's on Spotify, then yeah. You can find them if you search Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad. Either way, those songs in full and all the songs from all the other weeks, mostly.
Not all the other weeks, because the first week.
Yeah, we didn't do it. No one emailed being like, there's only 30 songs. Because we didn't do the song from the start. So there you go.
There are lots of songs. And the good thing is that if you like some of them, it points you in the direction of others that you might like.
Yeah.
Isn't it? That's great.
Yeah, so thank you for listening.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.